The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Customer, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line, our daily interaction, debate, exchange of ideas. Your ideas, our ideas, response, reaction. Just get in touch by calling 66 13 68. You can text 166 177, email studio at manxradio.com, and WhatsApp 07624 166 177. It's your chance to discuss whatever's on your mind, anything you want to put out there, something that you've just discovered, or reaction to anything we've talked about. And the important thing is, today we'll be awarding the very first Manx Radio Man in Line tea towel to Contributor of the Week. It may be completely random, but as normal, we'll just react to whatever happens through the day. Obviously, the TT paddock is starting to fill up. The boats are jam-packed with bikers coming in. It looks like it's going to be a very, very busy TT. So let's keep our fingers crossed for a safe TT. Have you actually missed the TT over the last couple of years? Well, nearly 3 years we haven't had anything. We sent John Moss with a Manx Radio microphone to find out.
Excuse me, madam, have you missed the TT? It's
yes, been a I have.
What parts of it do you miss? The racing, the atmosphere, what?
All of it.
All of it?
Yeah.
So you just enjoy getting immersed in it?
Yes, I do.
Have we missed it?
Have you missed it?
Yeah,
it's not been here, has it? Have you noticed?
We have missed it.
So you like it when it's here? You enjoy it?
Oh, yes, we enjoy it.
Which bits of it do you enjoy?
The whole lot.
We're asking people, have you missed the TT?
Yes.
You have? You enjoy? You're looking forward to it coming back?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you find it inconvenient at all, the fact the roads are closed, that you can't get to places you might want to get to?
A little bit, but...
What is it about the TT that you enjoy?
I'm a petrolhead.
Oh, really? Have you got a bike?
Not at the minute.
No.
I've got a little girl instead.
Okay, that takes up your time, yeah.
And your money as well, I suppose. Yeah. The start of it's my birthday every year, so... Yeah. I know when it's coming.
Any thoughts about this? Oh, by the way, if you probably may know if you've been trying to go on the mountain road already, but the mountain road is closed until 4:30 today for TT preparation work, setting up there. So the mountain road's closed. And tonight it all gets underway at Belown. The Belown circuit's going to be closed from 6:05. Today till at least 9:40. So the pre-TT classic road races. And of course, you'll be able to hear everything tonight on AM 1368. The Belown course closed from 6:05 till about 9:40 this evening. Along with the excitement of the TT, there's also the very, very serious matter of staying safe around the circuit during the racing fortnight. And that's particularly important for those living around those closed roads during the festival. So after 3 years, Police Sergeant Andrew Reid explains once more, new readers start here. Why? You have to follow the rules.
When the roads are closed and the races haven't started yet, there may still be high-speed vehicles or high-speed bikes travelling around the course, checking the course, and these might be the marshals, the travelling marshals. The actual road itself, when it becomes a racetrack, will be controlled by marshals, and those marshals have powers as a special constable and also have powers imbued on them under the Racing Act as well. So it's dangerous to be on a closed road, no matter when the racing's on or off, or even if it's a red flag or you feel that nothing's happening. It's a racetrack and it's to be treated as a dangerous place to be. The marshals are there to do a job. They're there to keep the race going and to keep the public and the competitors and themselves safe. And anybody that flouts those rules will be dealt with robustly. In previous years, the past TT, we've had an individual that got several months prison sentence. People get hefty fines from the courts. The courts do take this seriously because of the danger it puts that public in, the person in the themselves, the racers, and obviously it delays what should be part of the race. So the courts do take being on closed roads really, really seriously.
All right, so we've heard from the people, we've heard from the police. Now, with the TT race is now imminent, the Isle of Man's healthcare service is gearing up to deal with what will be, let's face it, increased demand during racing fortnight. The Manx health sector has gone through some significant changes since the races were last held 3 years ago in 2019. So how's it going to cope this time around? The chief exec of Manx Care is Teresa Cope.
We've done extensive planning. I mean, we understand what the numbers will look like in terms of the visitors to the island. We understand from previous years what we anticipate our additional demand to be. And we've had a working group looking at this, and we've signed off our operational plan for the TT. And that involves us putting in an operational command structure, which is at bronze, silver and gold, to make sure we have the right levels of support across all of our services with the right leadership and input into that wider strategic group, which is managing the entire event. Plus, we've also identified additional professionals who will support and complement our usual services. So we are staffed up, and we have been able to increase our staffing numbers in accordance with our plan.
So you've talked about additional staffing there. So are you confident that you'll be able to cope with multiple possible emergencies at once?
Yes, we are. We've done a number of scenario plannings. So we understand how we would respond to that. They are built into our plan. Obviously, there are scenarios whereby we would be having to say to the race organisers, we will need to postpone racing. But, you know, that is a very carefully considered decision in conjunction with our command structure. And we've worked with the race organisation to make sure that is factored in.
What's the bed capacity looking like at the moment?
So we are currently rated at Opal 1, which is where we wanted to be, and that's basically business as usual. We're running at a bed occupancy of around 85%, which is what we aimed for. We have all of the additional escalation processes in place in order to make sure we are going into the TT with the right number of beds, with the right number of staffing, and we have the best chance of being able to support this event in the right way.
Teresa Cope, well, we keep our fingers crossed and hope for a safe TT. Inevitably, the health services will be called into action, so we wish everyone the best. It's 14 minutes past 12 on Manx Radio. We've talked quite a bit over the past few weeks about geothermal energy, and while we've been talking about it, we've had a listener in Scotland who's been listening to this. David Shackleton is with us. David's on the line in southwest Scotland. Is that right, David?
That's correct.
Okay, and you've been hearing the fact we've been talking about geothermal energy. You're a geologist, so...
No, yeah, I was in the oil industry, yes.
And so you worked in geothermal wells, apparently, in Denmark in the 1980s, is that right?
1979, to be more correct.
And what was your experience in geothermal wells in Denmark then?
We had the first well was in Aars, A-A-R-S, and that was a very difficult well to drill, and it was more or less abandoned. But the next well, which was successful, was actually Tisted. This is on Jutland, the main peninsula, our main island of Denmark, yes. And that, I believe, was a success in the sense that I'm looking at notes from that time. And I'd very much like to talk to your two people who were on, Fred Gray, and also Graham Fox-Hume.
Okay. Yeah. We'll certainly put you in touch with them, David.
Yeah.
So what was your what led you to be involved in geothermal? Was it the company you were working for or the government, or how did it happen?
I was in Texas and on a course for drilling fluids. and therefore I had some experience of land, working on land, which of course the North Sea people didn't have. And as a result, when land rigging, land wells came up, because I'd also in Italy drilling some very deep wells, but they were not geothermal wells. And consequently, I, within the company, was someone who had most of the land drilling, yes. I overstayed my visa in America, and I don't think they'd ever let me back. But anyway, it was interesting, and it was very, very interesting to hear the two people talking. And I looked for my notebook, and it's quite full of geothermal wells.
Now, they in Denmark, of course, I think those they don't produce any electricity. They're purely district heating plants, I think, aren't they?
Yes, I think you're correct. I think that particularly applies to Copenhagen. There were some wells drilled over there. The two wells I was involved with was the Tisted, and that was a geothermal well.
So, David, have you any knowledge of the Isle of Man and how it may possibly work here?
Well, that's the immediate thing that I see. They talked about granite. The wells that I drilled on were geologically sandstone. But it's still got to go down quite deep. Yeah. Fire away.
I was just going to say, I mean, how much energy did you extract in Denmark? Can you put any figures on that?
Not really. Yes, not really. I wasn't involved with that side of it. I was involved with the drilling fluids, which we had lots of problems with.
What's the difference in drilling through sandstone and drilling through granite?
Well, sandstone is much, you could say, softer, you know. Granite is hard. And it was very difficult. The drilling on Jutland was difficult because it was limestone. And it was very difficult to the rigs that at that particular time were not fully equipped to keep the mud in shape. And consequently, it was a sort of dump and renew your mud system all the time. So the mud companies made a fortune. But Tisted, I have the notes on Tisted, and I've got an article that was sadly not a date on it, and it's talking about geothermal energy could heat all homes. Now, this would be at that time. It's geothermal energy could be exploited across the UK with hot spots, including Cornwall, East Yorkshire, Hampshire, Northern Ireland, and Scotland. And that's a very promising deep geothermal systems and generate electricity.
Do you know if they're looking at geothermal in Scotland at all, David?
I've not heard of it. Yeah.
Okay, all right, we appreciate that, David. Thanks for that. We'll get you in touch with Fred and Graham, but thanks for calling us today. That's David in southwest Scotland, who heard about our geothermal get-togethers over this and just where it may be possible for the Isle of Man to do something about it. It's something we're just going to keep on finding out about. Obviously, this situation in Southampton, that one's been going for a long, long time. And the geothermal energy, the plants that he talks about in Denmark, as he mentioned, Thisted and Copenhagen. Well, the Copenhagen one is less than 20 years old. It started in 2005. They don't produce electricity. They are district heating plants, just like the one that there is in Southampton. But then again, Denmark is way ahead. Denmark doesn't have much in the way of resources in terms of coal and things like that. But a lot of renewable energy in Denmark. Obviously, they've got an enormous number of wind turbines off the western coast. And biofuel is something they tend to go into a lot. They burn wood products. They've got energy from waste plants, the incinerator. They burn straw, biodiesel, bioethanol, and biogas as well. So as we head towards a green future on the Isle of Man, you just wonder where it's going to come from. Will it be geothermal? Will it be wind power? Everybody seems to be turning away from wave and tidal power. Well, we'll find out more. In the next few weeks, Daphne Kane will be on. She's the chair of the Climate Change Committee. We'll find out what their thoughts are, what their reports are. But your thoughts are very, very much welcome. If there's something you'd like to put out into the public domain, then by all means, get in touch. And if you've got experience of any renewable energy in other countries, that'll be fine. Graham dropped a note in and just said, in the paper, they're talking about the £70 million cost for Liverpool Dock will be more, apparently. It could be more than £70 million. Well, Mr. Crookle seemed fairly adamant about it, didn't it? Another message in that just says regarding the geothermal stuff, is government looking at this at the moment? They may be, but we haven't heard that they are. Public health haven't reported hospital COVID numbers for several weeks, says G. A simple number doesn't contravene data protection, so I assume they don't want the public to know. Pre-TT fortnight, says G. Well, they issue the weekly release, the media release, as to what the numbers are. There was one more death announced yesterday. Here's a message in from 404. Not all residents have missed the TT. That's 404. Didn't sign their name.
For your new bathroom, head to Peacetter, Harris Terrace, Douglas or Spring Valley. In Peacetter's fully fitted showroom, you'll find the latest bathroom products and designs, from new contemporary styles to traditional Victorian tiles, wall and ceiling panels, accessories and much more. With many ranges exclusive to Peacetter's, plus professional design advice from the experts, visit Peacetter, Harris Terrace, Douglas or Spring Valley.
You can get the best of it.
Red and yellow and pink or blue?
Thinking of a rainbow?
No, choosing colours for our windows and doors at Manx Glass and Glazing.
Oh, who'd have thought we'd have so much choice?
We do at Manx Glass and Glazing. When it comes to windows and doors, they offer a great choice of styles, materials and fabulous contemporary colours.
Improve and brighten up your home. Visit the Manx Glass and Glazing showroom on Snugborough Trading Estate. Or get inspired when you see the range at manxglass.com.
Don't miss the Kane and Wicker Furniture range in-store at Miller Chaps of Ramsey, including sofas and chairs, dining sets and coffee and side tables, with designs featuring quality frames, beautiful fabrics, comfortable fully sprung seats with leather binding and a huge range of window blinds to complement. Discover exclusive Kane and Wicker furniture now at Miller Chaps.
Creating a home where you'll love to be. Miller Chaps of Ramsey.
You want how much? 1% commission? That's £2,000 to sell my house. That's it. I'm seeing red.
Sick of huge commission fees? Don't get mad. See red. With CG Red, the new service from Cowley Groves, you can sell any house up to £350,000 for a fixed £750 fee. That's a saving of up to £2,750 on what you'd pay with a traditional estate agent.
So go on, see red. Visit cgred.im. They're giving other estate agents a darn good thrashing.
The green flag is being waved, so we are ready, so engage gear. first race. It is the Ellen Vanin Fuel Senior Race. The revs are up. We're underway now.
Since I was old enough to sit on the wall, I've been watching the races and marshalling now for over 40 years at Ballybeg on the Southern 100 course. This week's perspective heralds what we all hope will be a safe and exciting return to road racing in the Isle of Man, and we consider the preparations required and talk to lifelong fans. That's Perspective, this Sunday at 12 noon with me, Phil Gorn, on Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
26 minutes past 12. Les is with us. Hi, Les.
Hi, good afternoon, listeners. I'm just wanting to know, when are they going to put the signs out for the visitors to keep left? You know, we're going to have visitors from Germany, all over Europe, and there's not one single sign saying keep left.
What are they called? The Linksfahren ones?
Yes, the Linksfahren ones. Not one have I seen yet.
And whereabouts have you looked on the course?
All the way to Peel, even down towards the airport. It's just letting people know, you know, it's preparation and we ain't ready.
They were always out. They used to be out all the time.
Well, the thing is, they didn't have them out, and then all of a sudden they started to put them out, and there was a lot less accidents with, you know, people being on the wrong side of the road. So it works. So, you know, they're just not ready.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. And, I mean, I don't know if they can get them out quick enough. I don't know, but...
Well, presumably, they were always there. It was always a matter of course they were there. Maybe there aren't that many Germans coming this year. Maybe they know something we don't.
Excuse me. Germans coming over here for the TT? They're in abundance.
Okay. All right, Les.
I know. Also, the round all at the Sefton yesterday, gridlocked. Why? Because people are crossing that... the crossing, and it's too close to the roundall. If they make it a roundabout, people don't enter until it's clear. It's just backlog, and it's going to be chaos, and we're not even in TT yet.
Oh, crikey. Thanks, Les.
Thank you.
I appreciate your call. Here's Tony with us now. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Good, thanks. Lovely day.
Yes, at last. Summer is here. Also, they're saying the government, they brought it on specially for TT, because they can control the weather, you know. They might not say so, but they can. What I wanted to talk about was, everybody keeps going on about, we should be green, we've got to be green. Daphne Kane is on and on and on about it, and we can't use gas, we can't do this, we can't do that. They're missing the point. They're totally missing the point. When you get to a point where you do have sufficient carbon neutral or less carbon footprint, it won't go away because population's increasing. So you're going to have a backup because wind doesn't blow all the time. And as you said the other day, the megawatt cost is colossal compared to other choices. So my question is, we keep whittering on about wind, but the wind doesn't blow all the time. So what's the other choices? There doesn't seem to be very much talked about hydroelectric power. Denmark, by the way, all their wind farms, they don't have to have wind all the time. Basically because they have an interconnector to Norway which has excess electric power. So when they are not blowing windy, they can just import the stuff from Norway. And Norway uses hydroelectric to a large degree. I know, because I used to live there. They also have massive offshore oil and gas fields. And just for your information, Denmark originally did have oil and gas fields, but they've depleted them. So they still exist, but they are not producing very much now. So their ability to go and generate, they used a lot of the money they got from oil and gas to go and increase their dependence on wind. But it hasn't fixed their problems. That's why they've got to import power from Norway. So my question is, the discussion needs to stop being individual. We should do all of these things. Yes, we should put a wind farm in on the west coast somewhere. Offshore is ideal. There is a shallow part out there. put it there if you want. I don't really mind. But we need to have a more holistic approach. So we need wind power. We need hydroelectric power, which you will need anyway, because at some stage, the future will be a lot more rain or a lot less rain, one of the two. Global warming is coming. You cannot stop it. And even if you slow it down a little bit, it will still come. It will still arrive. You're still already getting weather that's bad. You're getting terrible weather changes that we haven't historically seen for years. Go and ask your Met Office. And when you get storms with higher surge tides, you're going to get a lot more coastal erosion, a lot more coastal flooding. What are we doing about that? The conversations are about, they're solely about, we should put wind farms in. We should put wind farms in. And it shouldn't be. It should be about everything. We need a backup power plant, whether it be nuclear or any other form, but you've got to pay for it. You need some form of energy from, I don't care whether Kroger's 2040, it will still be useful. We need to have more storage of water and use it for hydroelectric.
So do you think that what you're suggesting, I'm paraphrasing, is a connected, if you like, a connected thinking, the fact that we should retain our options. Is that right? Am I representing that?
Well, I'm glad you've got it. Daphne Kane doesn't seem to be able to see it. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, Andy. You know, why are you not thinking across the board? She immediately said when Kroger was mentioned, oh, we can't make gas, we can't produce gas, that's against the UN climate change. I don't really care about the UN. They're useless. Look at the situation. They want to control all the health outbreaks. But what did they do about China? Absolutely nothing. The origin of the disease was never found, but it was in China. But they never did anything about it. So I wouldn't let the World Health Organization organize anything. And I certainly wouldn't let the UN do anything. Gutierrez is a waste of space. What's he done about the war in Ukraine? Absolutely nothing. It's all been done by countries. I just think that the discussion needs to be a bit more grown up than grabbing headlines and saying what we mustn't do. We need to have a conversation that includes everything, not just one or two things that is particular to their political views.
Tony, what's your view of Kroger? Do you think it's a big chest of gold just waiting for us to go and fetch?
No, but I do think it's an opportunity we should look at seriously. But every turn you get, any comment comes from anybody in the Green Party, we shouldn't be doing that. It's against the law, it's against this, it's against... No, it's not. We should be driving towards energy independence. Because believe me, I've worked in the oil industry for 35 years. A lot of this stuff is very, very feasible. There's no reason why you can't do it. It's just that it's not being discussed on a technical level because there's a closed mind within the Green Party to anything that says oil or gas. And I'm not against the Green Party. I'm just against their political, shall we say, issues that they won't see the other side of the coin.
Well, we've got... How long have we got to sort it out, Tony? How many years do you think we've got?
I think you've got in the next... It's not 5 years, it's next 10 years. You need to have a clear-cut, long-term plan for the next 40 to 50 years. I mean... If you build a wind farm, it doesn't solve anything because if the wind doesn't blow, you've got no electricity. So if you have a power station that's based on water, you have backup power all the time at that power station. But it won't be sufficient for the needs of the island. And moving over to electric cars is not going to solve it either because electric cars are basically using lithium, which is toxic, dangerous, and in the long term... can't be used properly. So you'll have exactly the same thing as you've had with diesel. We're being led down a path by the government that is wrong because it suits their political attitudes.
What's going to replace the internal combustion engine then, Tony, if it's not EVs?
I think you've got to look in the long term at hydrogen. I think that's the future. I think hydrogen, if you have sufficient electric power from whatever source, you can produce hydrogen. Now, hydrogen's got its limitations, but there's already hydrogen cars running around California. And if you looked at the amount of lithium in the world, there's not sufficient. And it's certainly not a clean prospect because refining lithium is extremely dirty. It's dangerous, it's dirty, and it's also toxic. So you've got to look beyond that. You've got to look at something that, if I burn this, what do I get? Well, if you burn hydrogen, you get water. So that's what comes out of the exhaust pipe. No CO2, nothing. That doesn't solve the climate change, because climate change is being driven not by the UK, not by the Isle of Man, it's being driven by China, India, Australia, you name it. It's all been driven by large countries or larger countries which are still burning fossil fuels. And they're building fossil fuel stations at a tremendous rate. So the technical side of all this is being poo-pooed by another who prefers wind power. And I don't prefer any of them. What I prefer is a sensible approach, which is multi-pronged.
Okay, all right, we appreciate that. Have a good weekend, Tony.
You have a good week as well, Andy, and stay out the bike race. All right?
Thank you. All right, here's Julian now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Nice to have that lovely weather forecast for the foreseeable future.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed.
They're just going to talk about the practicalities of what we're talking about right now with energy. So I've looked at what Manx Gas imported and used across the island for the 2021, and that worked out at 1,400 gigawatt hours. That's three times what Pullrose puts out, because they give an electrical equivalent of what gas they're using if you were to heat the island, because of course they're talking about putting electrical heat pumps in everywhere. So that's just gas, so that would be cooking and heating. But then there's a heck of a lot of people on the island that got oil as well, so you could well double that. So we're suddenly, 1,300 is what the £3 billion 189 wind turbine Walney Wind Farm generates. So to heat the island electrically, just to replace the gas, is more than what that wind farm generates in a year. And that's their own figures. I'm not pulling this out of nowhere. Walney Wind Farm posted 1,300 gigawatt hours out. Manx Gas is reporting 1,400 gigawatt hours for heating, and Pullrose puts out 500 odd for what we use normally down the electrical cables. So if you'd want to displace Pullrose by just heating electrically and cooking, you're looking at seven Pullroses to displace that. How's that going to work? Seven Pullroses. Now, if we require heating more than the largest wind farm in the world, just for a tiny island, does that make any sense?
What gets me about the where we're moving into the future is I'm quite a fan of statistics. I like numbers because numbers never lie, and we don't seem to be getting any granular detail from government about what it is they propose. We know what they don't like, but we don't actually know what they are proposing. And this joined-up operation, whether it's hydro, whether it's geothermal, whatever it is, wind power, wave power, tidal power, or Kroger, whatever it is, we don't quite know. And that doesn't seem to square with the fact that there's a crisis on and an emergency. In an emergency, you normally move quickly.
Well, that's right. If we thrown the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to, say, taking our time over checking up on whether, say, certain injections are safe over a 10 to 15 year period, why not short circuit the sonar and magnetometer searches down below for the gas and just start drilling straight away? If there's an emergency in terms of, the fact that we might not be able to heat ourselves soon, you've seen, fuel prices are going up this week again. Maybe we should just short circuit the, because even the best will in the world, the latest deep analysis of under the ground is not exact. I mean, the only way you're ever going to know is to drill. So if you're going to have an emergency health thing, you might have an emergency electrical thing. But, you know, that's but, yeah, I mean, government perhaps, you know, maybe we should like to know, I mean, how many turbines are they talking about? Where are they going to put them? Are we going to be able to see, you know, the mountains of Mourne of an evening anymore? Are we going to talk about how much resources it takes to build a turbine and then multiply that out and see, you know, how does that ever work out? The blades aren't renewable, the 300 feet long, some of them are. That where are they going to be put in landfill? Because that's what happens to them in the end. What's going to happen to the seabed if you, say, put 50 in? Who's going to churn up the seabed and throw the cables up to somewhere on the island so that they can bring the power to it?
And is there an implication for the steam packet?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if you've got Belfast and Dublin or whatever going out, are they going to have to be diverted around it? Is it going to cost more in fuel? I mean, all these things have to be factored in. But the factor is, heating the island just in gas, according to the Isle of Man's figures, is more than the largest wind farm can generate. It's like, and that costs $3 billion. So is it a pipe dream? I mean, how is that ever going to work? I mean, an equivalent coal power station, like one of the new high efficiency, low emission or heli ones, like the one in Datteln in Germany, cost $1 billion. And that makes 11 times more electricity because it's consistent all through the year. And as a spin off, they heat 100,000 homes, which, if you think about heating, I mean, a kettle is a tiny fraction of what you would need. Imagine an immersion heater that has to heat a boiler. You know, it's going to take a lot more than a kettle to say, do a 300-litre tank so that people can have a bath and a shower.
Okay.
I mean, it's a huge amount of power.
All right, we appreciate that. Have a good weekend.
Same to you. Cheers. Bye.
It's 18 minutes, Bon. Thanks for calling in today. The Slock Road, says Janet, the Slock Road all the way from Ballykillowy to the Foxdale Plantation, one of the most scenic routes on the Isle of Man, peppered with signage now. Complete overkill, ruining the landscape. Same thing happened on the approach to Fisher's Hill a few years ago. I don't know who takes the decisions with these things, but there's little sensitivity in this ministry of inappropriate signage. Less is more should be the mantra, not can we squeeze another one in, says Janet.
We all have a Ginger Hall memory. Whether it's watching the TT on Dad's knee, or singing Happy Birthday in the garden, or watching Grandad do the robot at your cousin's wedding. Have your event at the Ginge. We're an approved partner of Conister Bank, and finance options are available, including a 3-month payment holiday up front. With great food and drink in a spectacular setting, you won't be disappointed. Make a Ginger Hall memory. Visit the Ginger Hall events on Facebook. Rates and repayment terms subject to terms and conditions.
Every drop is precious. Water. So easy to take it for granted, isn't it? Our reservoirs supply the needs of our island, but with the effects of climate change, that's becoming more challenging every year. Manx water is the only water we have, so we need to make every drop count by using it wisely, at home, in the garden, and in general. Visit manxutilities.im to find out how you can begin smarter living to lower energy bills and reduce your impact on our island environment.
Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
Need quality type 1 stone for your building or contracting job? Then contact Tells with no minimum order for collection or delivery. Call 677-137. Visit Tells Limited in Snugborough or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Skips are what they do.
We're the guys that hire one to you.
Call Tells Skips today.
677-137.
In the Live Lounge this week, I'll be joined in the studio by members of two of the biggest bands on the Isle of Man, DCAC and Pigs on the Wing. These top tribute acts are returning to the Royal Hall over TT and we'll be finding out all about it. We also have new music from Voodoo Bandits, Francesca May and Mad Daddy to play for you, along with a jam-packed gig guide, battle track, third song and more. That's the Live Lounge this Saturday with me, Christy D. Listen live at 5 p.m. or on demand after the show at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Look at that time, it's 12:45. Hi, Tommy.
Oh, blimey. Oh, hi, Andy. I was just going through some paperwork, Andy, and I came across this piece I'd written down from the Red Button Science pages. I think it may be like a year old or something, but basically, it reads that an Edinburgh company has won the UK's top engineering prize for its digital hydraulic power system. The Artemis Intelligent Power's digital displacement system was a technical advance of global importance. The technology could increase the power of offshore wind turbines and cut fuel consumption and carbon emissions in computer trains and buses. The award judges called it a massive leap forward. And that's what I've written down, Andy. So I don't know, has anybody on the computer heard of the Artemis Intelligent?
The Artemis Intelligent. We'll take a look at that, Tommy.
Yes, yeah, please, Andy. Yeah, that'd be thing, right? And we'll get back another day on it.
Fantastic. What are you going to be doing during TT?
Well, I'll be hanging about. Well, listen, I'm looking at over the campsite now, Andy.
How is it? Many in the campsite?
Well, it's mugged, it is, Andy. It's full up, it is, mate. Honestly, you couldn't believe it. I'm watching there now, and in fact, from the top of the campsite, right down to the ready bottom, where it's alongside where the dog walking place is. And there's that many people down there as well, Andy. It's fantastic, it is.
All right, have a good weekend, Tommy. All right, and David's with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. I just wanted to quickly talk about what the guy was on earlier there. What is our government actually doing? What are the all the Keys members or the Timbledon itself, which actually track, and you're quite right, which road or street are we actually going down? Are we going down to tinker at the edges? Are we going to actually go in a direction? And I think the direction should be, the first thing is to establish another link to the UK or even Ireland for power, another cable. Because I think my personal view on that is, whether we like it or not, in years to come, electric will be a major contributor. And whoever powers that generation and shares it with other communities, countries or whatever, we need to have a share of that.
And the Isle of Man, can be very nippy on its feet when it wants to be with legislation. So there's nothing stopping the Isle of Man being a leader in something, anything.
Well, yeah, but I think we've got lead shoes on. I don't see anything coming out. We got when the girls are next week, ask her, what is that $42 million? Is it a real pot of money? What are we going to do with it? We got these teams looking into different sources. Why don't we just say to people, all the houses in the Isle of Man have got to comply with an AAA rating before they're approved. It might slow down things and it may push the price up a little bit, but they'll be energy efficient. And why can't we do some other things like saying smaller things to challenge government itself to say, the prison, government offices, all sorts of big buildings we've got, is why aren't they doing their 10%? Why aren't they looking at their energy costs and saying, we need to achieve a 10% energy saving on each of the buildings we've got? And we can do the same.
It'll be interesting. And I mean, the public loves detail. You know that, David. The public likes to know things. And I think at the moment, there is a bit of a vacuum.
There's more than a vacuum. There's a void, and we need to fill it.
All right. Thanks for that, David.
Bye.
Cheers now. And Bonzo's on. Hi, Bonzo.
Oh, hi. Yes. Listening to Julian and Tony and David just there. Point before I go on to others. When it comes to referring to Daphne Kane and other female politicians, it's often, look, Daphne Kane, you know, or the girl who's coming on next week, or something like that. You can sort of, well, you know, you can hear the sexism and misogyny, right, for miles. It's really something I think that some callers really ought to check themselves about. You know, after all, what is it, 51-52% of the population of the island is female, and I think, you know, we're almost 50% of Manx politicians in Timbledon female. So, a little less of the old disparaging, I think, might be a good idea. When it comes to issues on renewables, again, with statistics, ask any statistician, you can prove anything with statistics. Ask any accountant. You can prove anything with accountancy. So those kind of arguments I take with a pinch of salt. Yes, I agree with Tony and David Sachs in that what Daphne Kane would advocate, and what everyone who's been advocating climate action and a green agenda in Tynwald and on the island, is that there does need to be a multifaceted approach. It's not just a question of going, right, everybody, we're not going to use gas anymore, we're not going to use oil anymore, we're just going to stick up wind farms and everyone will have to take their electricity out of that. No, that's nonsense. Of course it's nonsense. Wind is a very good alternative. It's here now, and the price of it, people are making rather misleading quotations about the price of it, which are based on the old subsidies under the Contracts for Difference regime, which were to actually get people to invest in wind power. But those subsidies have gone down over time to the point where now they're virtually not there. And wind power is now, and yes, I hate to say about statistics, but no, it is recorded fact that wind power is now the cheapest form of renewable energy.
Is that what you and think the Isle of Man should do, Bonzo? Do you think we should
not entirely.
Yeah.
Now, what we should do is we should have, first off, onshore wind for ourselves. That will be able to produce the generating capacity that we need. Yes, there is a problem of when we run out of wind. But there are various ways of storing it, either by reutilization of battery technology, because when a battery for an electric car is no longer useful for an electric car, it still holds 95% of its charge. And so you can put them in a great big rack, a great big container, like in a server room or something, and then use it to store electricity generated from renewables. That's kind of the basis of a Tesla power wall. So there are other ways of doing it as well, from hydroelectric storage to actually mechanical storage, where it winds up a great big weight up a tower, and then you drop the weight down from the tower. There are ways of storing that energy. But as part of the mix, yes, you need things like solar on people's houses or on the roofs of things. And most importantly of all, you need more efficiency in the use of energy so that you don't have to use as much. Warm homes, more efficient electrical appliances, more efficient use of the electrical appliances, like not having them on standby all the time. Now, all of that can mean that we can generate the electricity we need at a price that we can, and have the energy at a price that we can afford, and we can plan everything on it, and that energy will help fight the climate crisis.
Bearing in mind, we don't have any wind turbines on the Isle of Man nor around the Isle of Man, and the people who are advocating it, the activists, the enthusiasts, indicate that we should be moving at breakneck speed. We don't appear to be moving at breakneck speed.
Here we go again with the use of words, activists, enthusiasts, as if it's just a bunch of tree huggers and Guardian readers who are trying to inflict vegan quiche on everybody.
They're your words. The climate crisis is a word that has been used, in climate emergency. Those are the words used by those people. So that would indicate an emergency requires an immediate response.
I'm sorry, Andy. No, by those people, Tynwald has declared a crisis emergency by the vote of Tynwald.
And what are they doing about it? What are they doing to respond to the emergency? When we had an emergency for COVID, they did something. So what is Tynwald actually doing on a daily basis?
They have passed the Climate Change Act. They are now looking at how to make regulations to change elements under that. The Climate Change Transformation Board is reporting, and these are all the things that Daphne will be able to explain to you next week.
Okay, all right, we have to go, Bonzo, because we're out of time. We appreciate it. Some messages in saying, imagine hearing all the houses with geothermal energy. How would the company justify price increases above inflation of workforce wages? No profit in that. It will never happen, says Des. Well, I think there's a brand new financial model coming. Those geothermal heating systems would appear to break the mold, as it were. Is that what we're aiming to do? Now, I've been talking about these, and I'm not joking about this. We have Man in Line tea towels that are, and every week I'm going to be awarding a Man in Line tea towel to a correspondent who has entered into the foray. And this week, because it's week number one, I'm awarding two. Marie dropped a note in just to say, my daughter-in-law took her granddaughter to the NSC on Wednesday. It was closed. One of the flumes, which took years to install, was out of action awaiting repair. At random, we've drawn your contribution out, and our second winner of the tea towel. My daughter's a qualified bus driver, says Mike. She works as a school dinner lady now. She gets paid more for this as a school dinner lady than driving a £300,000 bus without 60 people on board. No wonder there's no bus driver, says Mike. Those are our two winners of the Man in Line tea towel, which will be yours to collect from Manx Radio. That's it. Thanks to everybody contributing this week. Of course, as usual, we couldn't read everything out, but everything does get read. Have a great time at Belown tonight and with the TT, and thanks to Barry Redfern producing all this week.
W-I-L-T-D.